Radio 560 KPQ.
This is The Agenda from News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com, where topics of local concern affecting you are open for discussion. And now your host, Michael Knight.
Recognize that music? No, I don't either. Well, we'll try and figure out what that music is all about, but consider this while we're listening to it. One day, Alexander Dumas had nothing to do, so he took a story called The Nutcracker and the Mouse King, and he adapted it to become the story of The Nutcracker. And it had a premiere in the Mariinsky Theater in St. Petersburg in 1892. I was not there, but I heard about it. It was on a double bill with a guy named Pyotr Ilyich Tchaikovsky, who had written an opera called Iolanta. And apparently it was not a success. However, there was a 20-minute suite that Tchaikovsky got from that ballet that turned out to be somewhat more valuable than that night in St. Petersburg. Flash ahead 206 years into a world in which now every major American ballet and symphony orchestra generates about 40% of their annual ticket revenues from what was the creation that night of Tchaikovsky and what has come to be known as the Nutcracker. Think about that. Every American ballet company, major to minor, gets about 40% of their annual income because of Tchaikovsky. Now, the first performance of The Nutcracker was not also thought to be not much of a success. The lead ballerina was called corpulent and podgy by the local critic. Now, you don't know any ballerinas? If you can find a podgy ballerina, I'd like to see her. Anyway, one critic said that the roles were completely insipid, but as for Tchaikovsky's score, they said that was really inspirational. From beginning to end, beautiful, melodious, original. They loved it. Now let's flash back 206 years. You know the Stahlbaums. They always greet you with a hearty, Fröhliche Weihnachten this time of the year. It's Christmas at their home, and the family and friends are putting up the tree, and once the tree is finished, they bring in the children, and everybody looks at all the wonderful things that are there, and suddenly the grandmother clock strikes 8, and the guy that always scared me when I was a kid, Drosselmeyer, walks in. He's a dignitary, he's a magician, he's the godfather. He's the man who made all the dancing toys and the lifelike dolls who are about to come to life. And then we go to the land of sweets, which is over by Washtenaw, which is ruled by the Sugar Plum Fairy. And in this land, there's dancing, all sorts. A Spanish dance, an Arabian dance, a Chinese dance, a Russian dance, the dance of the reeds, the dance of the clowns, the waltz of the flowers, and a tarantella, which I am going to help you with by not dancing at all. I won't even play the tambourine. And from there, the show degenerates, and if your daughter is 6 years old, you know that that's when she gets a stomach ache, and you never did see the end of it, because you have to go home when you take kids to see The Nutcracker. And here to fill us in on all the details, some of which I've left out intentionally because they're so sordid, is the maestro, the conductor and the music director of the Wenatchee Valley Symphony Orchestra, Nicholas Kowili. Merry Christmas to you, maestro.
Merry Christmas. Great to be here.
When's the first time you saw The Nutcracker? Did your parents ever take you as a child?
Oh, I saw it once, probably in my teens, I would say. Didn't really know much about it. Just took it in visually. But really got to know it as a conductor for the first time, probably as a student doing the suite. And then as a conductor of the complete ballet, I did it for the first time with Yakima Symphony, I'm going to say 7 years ago.
Wow. Well, the Rolling Stones have to play Satisfaction every night. Someone has to play The Nutcracker every Christmas, right? But it's not like you don't want to. It's still a beautiful piece. It's really, in fact, just hearing the opening strains there of that section that I played takes you back to seeing the show, takes you back to Christmas's past, takes you back to maybe the first time you heard the music.
That's right. I mean, there's a reason why, you know, the Pacific Northwest Ballet does 38 performances of this piece, this ballet. And we do about 4 performances here every year. It's just such a popular thing. People come back to it every year.
I think I probably asked you this before, but does someone own the publishing to this, or is it perform free?
This is now public domain, as is the case with many composers after they've been gone for 50, 75, 100 years. It kind of depends on the state or who owns the estate. But, this is way public domain. There are certain parts of the stage production that are not public domain. For example, Maurice Sendak's version that the Pacific Northwest Ballet did, that's kind of owned by that.
Separately copyrighted.
Separate copyright. They call those a grand rights license for anything that's on the stage.
So you can protect in the legal way the choreography, but not the music.
Yes, and those are more the sets and the images. The choreography, of course, is owned by the choreographer and the dance company and the dance troupe. Music is public domain, but those images, those particular styles of costumes that Maurice Sendak did, those are owned by his estate, I guess.
Were you ever creeped out by Mr. Drosselmeyer when he comes in with the eye patch and the weird walk and the strange erect bearing he has?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things about the Nutcracker that's so appealing, is that you're kind of looking at Christmas through the eyes of a child. So everything that's, you know, maybe as an adult you don't think as creepy, but as a child, you know, these big things, these rats, these soldiers, presents, these colorful things, those are very, very gigantic in the eyes of a young person.
What do you think of the music itself? I mean, it's so familiar that it really is like listening to Satisfaction, but at the same time, when you study it as a conductor, how do you approach?
This is probably one of the most difficult pieces to perform in the repertoire, even though we do it all the time. Is actually quite awkward and daunting and physically demanding. Even though it comes across as beautiful and novel, something we do every single year. But, you know, I've read interviews from players from the Pacific Northwest Ballet and even the players in the orchestra playing this weekend. They say, you know, I've played this dozens, hundreds of times, and I still can't master, you know, this particular passage or this particular transition. It's very, very difficult, but beautiful.
Was Tchaikovsky known for that, writing simple, beautiful pieces that were difficult to play?
Yes. I mean, if you look at his total output, 6 symphonies, several ballets, many operas, fantasy overtures, many concerti, lots of this stuff tend to be on the virtuosic side. I think he wanted to take the music a step further than where Beethoven took the orchestra.
What about this instrument that's featured in the symphony, the celeste or the celesta?
Yeah.
I guess that means star in Italian, or the heavens.
Yeah. Celesta is actually a keyboard instrument. If you opened up its guts and looked inside, you'll find that there are many chimes. Not unlike the chimes you might see in a doorbell. But those keys activate a hammer that hits these chimes, and it produces this kind of toy box kind of sound, which is perfect for something like this, the Nutcracker.
And do you use a real one or a synthesizer? Or?
This time we have to use a real one. In the past, we've borrowed the celesta from Central Washington University, where I also work. But this instrument is just so fragile, and it's, it's a five-figure instrument, very, very expensive, and it's hard to travel. To find it, the right vehicle, you kind of have to lay it on its side, and then those chimes become detached from their hanging points. So anyway, to insure it, so we decided it's easier and better and works okay for this production to use a keyboard.
And do you tune one of those?
You can't tune them because, you know, those metal bars
are
metal. You can't vary the length of those bars, and bending them won't really affect its pitch. It might affect its tone. So, you can't tune them.
How many performances of the Nutcracker will you perform?
So we'll do 4 total, 3 that are open to the public and 1 that was completely bought by a private employer. So 4 total this season.
And when you look forward to that type of performance during the holiday season, I guess that everyone knows that that's what they're doing for Christmas, right? The Nutcracker.
This, one of the reasons it's so well attended is because it's a family show. You know, there's lots of children involved. There are parents that are sometimes involved. And then the specter of the ballet and the acrobatics that Fabulous Feet Studio masters every single year with silks and bars and acrobatics. I think everyone loves seeing this kind of I'm going to call it a Cirque du Soleil kind of a production.
It makes me think that there's more rehearsals involved, am I right? Because you guys are famous for not being able to rehearse. You just show up and do the show.
Right. Well, in this particular case, we did two rehearsals, one on Tuesday, one on Thursday. It's for us to, you know, learn the notes and figure out our pacing. We've done it every single year, so they kind of gotten used to my tempi. But it's also for the dancers to practice with the timing of the music. A live orchestra is quite different than a recording.
And is it up to you to make the music go at the pace they've rehearsed, or does everybody have to compromise?
I would say there are places where tempi, where the dancers are dependent on the perfect tempo, or else their jumps will be too fast or too slow or too plodding. But there are other places where the tempi and transitions are not as critical, when there's just sort of play acting on stage. But certainly for the ballet things, it needs a perfect tempo.
As we, I didn't make up those reviews, by the way, that I read earlier. Everything that Tchaikovsky was not met with immediate adoration, which is kind of stinging when you think about it. We consider him to be one of the gods of the who is so capable in his ability to create wonderful pieces. And yet some of his works, when they were new and he was facing contemporary critics, they said, Tchaikovsky, old hat.
That's true. And as much as we venerate him now, as in his time, he faced lots of criticism on his music, that it was unplayable, that it
now
was...
that's a criticism.
That it was overly emotional. And actually, he was quite hard on himself, too, you know, like many composers comparing themselves to Beethoven. And so he sought to create a new type of music, one that was more emotional, one that was more intimate and personal. And I think, especially being a Russian composer, he faced a lot of criticism about that.
You mean just because he was Russian, the European composers thought he was lesser than?
That, and then this idea that, you know, he was comparing himself to a Western composer in Beethoven. You know, the Russians would say, no, we are Russians. We compose Russian music. You need not have to compare yourself to whoever this other god is from a different country.
So that's very interesting that there was that kind of the local critics and the local people were able to find something wrong with Tchaikovsky's work, and even with his motivation, for that matter.
That's right. And then Tchaikovsky himself was having a hard time with his own identity and fitting into his society. A closeted gay man. He felt like he had, and a Russian, he felt that he had to have this outward appearance of might and masculinity and strength, while on the other hand, he had this hidden identity on the inside.
It was a very different world in the 1890s. Did he ever come west? Did he ever play in the United States and compose in New York or do any of those adventures?
I don't think so. He mostly stayed there in Russia, St. Petersburg.
Was he a conductor ever?
That's a good question. I don't know if he was a conductor. I know he was a pianist, but I don't know if he ever got in front of the ensemble.
And was he of such skill as a pianist that he could play his own parts or just write them?
Yes. You know, when you think about a Russian pianist, though, you really think about Rachmaninoff.
Yes, you do, who apparently had hands as big as pies, right?
That's right. So, you know, when you talk about, you know, a consummate composer and performer as a pianist, Rachmaninoff is the first to come to mind.
Although there's Horowitz. Not to bring up a completely different world, but I saw a video of him recently, and God, what a performer, what a player. He was intense to the point where you don't almost watch him more than you listen to the music.
Yes, but he, you know, he was only a performer. He wasn't a composer like Rachmaninoff was.
Good point.
But yes, these Russian pianists were just incredible technicians, great strength on the piano. It made it sound like the piano was really an orchestra when they played.
I probably asked you this before, but did Tchaikovsky know what he had done when he wrote The Nutcracker? Was there any inkling during his lifetime that he had come up with something very special?
No, probably not. I don't think he anticipated the cash cow that this piece would produce now in 2018. But he sought to create something very, very appealing, of course. I mean, don't forget Swan Lake, among his other ballet outputs. It's amazing that we now consider The Messiah by Handel and The Nutcracker as kind of annual December traditions.
And do you still like playing them? I mean, you know it's coming, so you really don't have to.
I've gotten to the point where I can probably do the whole thing without a score, because I've done it so many times at this point. I mean, in my tempies, you know, I could probably clock myself on a metronome, and I think I'm probably within one or two points on tempos. So I just have it in my head so well. I have many, many favorite moments in this piece. There's a moment in the Russian trepak that I just love. There's a moment in the snowflake waltz that I really love. And frankly, I love the overture. It's a beast to play the overture for the violins and the violas, but I still really love the overture as well.
Did he orchestrate it himself, or did he work with the staff? I guess he must have done it himself.
Oh, he did it all. This is all himself.
Yeah.
There are dozens and dozens of reductions and varied instrumentations of this, however. He wrote his original, but depending on the ballet company, depending on the size of the pit, depending on the orchestra's budget, you can do large versions, medium versions, small versions, you know, electronic versions that are all out there with these arrangers that have orchestrated this to their liking.
So Tchaikovsky and the family gets nothing, but the guys who have the new arrangements get paid.
Exactly. As soon as it became public domain, they had no estate to buy the rights from to create these arrangements. So they could just, anyone at will can arrange this to their liking.
Let that be a warning to all you budding artists out there that Tchaikovsky, even though he had on a nice black suit in the photograph that you see, faced the same fate as Van Gogh. His paintings are selling beautifully. He's just not around to participate.
That's right.
Our very special guest is conductor and music director Nicholas Kawili. He's with the Wenatchee Valley Symphony Orchestra. When we come back, it's going to get weird in here.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com. On News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
At 12:37, my very special guest for The Agenda today is conductor and musical director of the Wenatchee Valley Symphony and a regular visitor to our show, Nicholas Kawili, or Maestro, as we call him around here. Well, let's sell some tickets to the Nutcracker. How do we get tickets, and what night would you recommend us going?
Oh, gosh. We are totally sold out.
Just now?
Yes.
The first 10 minutes of this interview did that.
Yes, exactly.
I want credit. Excellent. Well, good for you. Okay. Well, you can. There's a waiting list, I'm sure. You can stand in the back. I don't know if they do that in New York. I don't know if they do it here. We'll find out.
However, normally you'd find tickets at the Numerica PAC website, or you can get it on WenatcheeValleySymphony.org.
Okay, we'll put that aside, and I'll just say Weird Al Yankovic, and you take it. He's coming to town, and for some reason he asked for a backup band.
You know, we got this text, or I got this text last month from our executive director, Terry Snyder, and she says,
don't say no, just think about this.
So, Weird Al Yankovic would like us. Oh, actually, it was the production manager over at Town Toyota Center asking us what we thought about this idea. And Weird Al actually has been touring. I think he toured last year with his own little band show, you know, five-piece band, I think.
Right.
And I think he's kicking off a new tour this next year called Strings Attached. The idea that he's backed up by an orchestra of strings. So, you know, a little negotiation here and there, and not very difficult. They said yes, we said yes. And I think my life is now complete. You know, I've done Tchaikovsky and Beethoven and Mahler, and now I will do Weird Al Yankovic.
It'll be this will be your last encore, right?
That's right. I can go out and
well, how does he
start
make,
my career as a professional golfer?
Before he takes you on the road and we never see you again as you go play with Weird Al through the world's great capitals. Does he have arrangements? He just sends him along?
Yeah, this is the same way that we did the Disney show. And there's also, movie music, video game music, Pixar shows. They come with an arranger, or maybe a team of orchestrators and arrangers, and they put these things together for the orchestra, and they send out all those parts, and you can rehearse a little bit of them before they come, and then you add the guest artists or the artist, and off you go.
Or if you don't have an artist, Weird Al Yankovic.
Exactly.
Now, are you a fan of his work? You can answer this any way you want. You can be honest, or you can just lie to me. I don't care. But I personally can't see Weird Al Yankovic with the symphony orchestra, but there you go. I guess I'll wait and I'll reserve judgment.
Yeah, I mean, this belongs in a comedic category of art, much like Victor Borga or who's the guy that does those versions of the Beethoven Fifth Symphony. He calls it like a football game.
PDQ Bach.
PDQ Bach. and then we have Weird Al Yankovic. Yes, this is kind of on the crude and hilarious side, but the art is still there. Weird Al is a great singer. He's a great lyricist, and he's a great performer. So all that put together, I mean, I have great respect for this person, even though it's on a different planet than, say, the Nutcracker.
There is a planet called Nutcracker. This is one of the moons that goes around that planet called the world of Weird Al. The moon of Weird Al.
That's right. And, I mean, for him to have persisted as a in-demand performer for all these years, still parroting current artists and arts of old, that's just an amazing career. So I get great respect and looking forward to working with Weird Al.
You chose a better word. You said parody. That's good.
That's right.
I said novelty, which is what we used to do with who was that guy that had funny songs? Ray Stevens, Ahab the Arab and stuff like that.
That's right.
Which top 40 stations would grab and play once every 2 hours for some reason.
That's right.
Well, how many songs is he going to do, and how many songs do you have to practice?
You know, we haven't gotten the writer. A writer, by the way, is a technical sheet that tells us what kinds of microphones and visual aids and that kind of thing. We haven't got the writer yet, and we haven't gotten the set sheet yet. So we will see what happens.
And the full symphony will be there? He wants everybody?
We also need that information, but I'm presuming that, and I kind of seen some YouTube videos of other shows with other orchestras, I'm presuming he's going to want a standard full-size orchestra. And this is going to be during our off-season. It occurs on August 13th, which is an off-season for our symphonies, but we'll have to recruit people from their vacations and hope they can participate. But to be honest, almost every one of our musicians has called the office and said, I have to be a part of this show.
Really?
I have to be a part of this show.
Oh, that's so wonderful. That's worth an interview right there.
Oh, once in a lifetime experience. You all this training in your life, and here you are culminating with this performance with Weird Al.
Tell everybody in the woodwinds to watch their amateur, because there's laughter throughout the songs. Don't get involved with it, right?
That's right. That's right. I can see them laughing and forgetting to play.
Snorting into their piccolo.
That's right.
Well, what day is that for Weird Al?
Weird Al will be Tuesday, August 13th. Those tickets are already on sale. That's going to be the Town Toyota Center, and they have a variety of levels of tickets, reserved, not unreserved, and they also have this the strings attached Weird Al meet and greet experience, where you get a number of different pieces of memorabilia, including music and autographs and posters.
Well, you're probably on the national tour of Woolly Bully. You guys are probably going to be called again one more time. Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs are coming to town. They've requested a symphony orchestra for Hello There, Little Red Riding Hood, and then you'll be on stage. People will say, I did Weird Al, I've got to do Sam the Sham. Sorry. Our special guest is Nicholas Cooley. We'll be back to talk about the Wenatchee Valley Symphony Orchestra right after these words.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560 Cable Night on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
12:50, that's our time in News Radio 560 KPQ. I'm Michael Light. My very special guest is the maestro, conductor, and musical director for the Wenatchee Valley Symphony Orchestra. Nicholas Cooley is here, and we always enjoy his visits. Let's look ahead. Let's look ahead to our calendar now that we successfully sold out the Nutcracker. And I'm sure Weird Al will do well without too many commercials, but get your Weird Al tickets. And then the Planets come to town, right?
That's right. That's our concert number 3 of our 4 concert season.
When will that be?
It will be February 23rd, a couple months from now. And it's called Astronomy. And naturally, as you might expect, we will perform Gustav Holst's The Planets. And this is one of those pieces which we would call a tone poem, one aural experience to represent each one of the planets, minus Pluto.
Pluto's not in it?
Pluto's not in it. Mars, Jupiter, Earth is not on it.
Venus?
So it's all the planets that we're not living on. Holst is known for a lot of different pieces, but this is pretty much his hit. This suite of tone poems. And I would say that the music from this, from Mars, this 5/4 driven monstrosity to Jupiter, which is this jubilant celebration, and all the way to Venus, which is more ethereal. I think a lot of this has inspired movie soundtracks, as much as Strauss and Beethoven have done that for John Williams. The planets really are the quintessential example of creating some imagery with just sounds.
And, of course, he was stuck there probably somewhere along. I don't know which one he wrote first, but somewhere along the line he had to look at his list and said, got like a 5 planets to go.
<That's>
I've
right.
got nothing.
That's right. And, all of them have character. Really, you can do them in any order. But, it starts very strong in Mars. And then as it moves along to Neptune, it becomes more and more spacious, almost depicting the planets as being more and more far away. What's interesting about the last one, Neptune, is that he asks for a unseen, wordless female chorus. So we have this rocking motion from high-pitched voices, triple voices. And we've invited Wenatchee's Appalayers, which is a women's chorus here in town. And they will join us from backstage.
Because they have to be unseen.
They have to be unseen, although we can amplify them with microphones if we need to make sure we have the right balance for that. But they'll join us. Then we add one extra element. Vortex Productions, a local video production company with whom we've worked many times, they will provide visual imagery to go with this performance of the planets. So we'll have the piece itself, we'll have some visual stimulus, and we'll also have this women's chorus from offstage.
When did Holst write this?
Oh, good question. I have to look that one up.
Okay. I was just wondering, because his accurate musical depiction of the planets seems to be less than a coincidence. I wonder how much he knew about the planets and how much his research helped him create a song that would be appropriate for Neptune, for instance.
Yeah, so this is more than 100 years ago, 1914 through 1916. I'm just looking it up right now.
So even the images that we had of Mars were very rudimentary.
That's right. So all our satellite images, he had no access to these. I think really he's basing some of this music off the namesakes of these planets, the Roman gods that go with these planets, if they're jokesters, if they're gods of war, et cetera, et cetera.
Excellent. The mythology made the music. I look forward to that. February 23rd, Astrology with the Planets by Gustav Holst. Nicholas, I'm sorry we're out of time. I'll see you back. We'll talk about the planets when Holst and his crew get there. Good luck with Weird Al Yankovic. You can come back and we'll do an interview on that if you want. You can tell us more about the rehearsal.
Maybe we can get Weird Al in here with us.
Or that would be great as long as he does not bring his accordion, because we must have standards. Thanks a lot. Good to see you again, Maestro.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560.